Steve Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 797, Cyber Libertarian Fascism. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on June 11th of the year 2014. This program is going to be updating the massive series I did on L'Affaire Snowden, or the man I call alternately Eddie the Friendly Spook or the Peach Fuzz Fascist. And we're going to be updating that massive series necessarily. I'm going to have to telescope some of the key points of information because there is no way that I can do justice to that series in the limited time available. Suffice it to say that when one moves the camera to the right, and that's certainly where it goes, with Eddie Snowden, with Julian Assange, and the whole Snowden op is simply an extension of the WikiLeaks operation. When you take a look at Glenn Greenwald, or a fellow we're going to look at great length this evening, Pierre Omidyar of eBay, Glenn Greenwald's financial backer for his new online journalistic adventure. When you take a look at Ralph Nader, the one-time consumer advocate, who appears to have left the road off the right shoulder, by the way, at an angle of 90 degrees, what you find is not only extreme right-wing things, but one finds, frankly, cyber libertarians who have manifested what Mussolini said when he referred to fascism, saying, il fascismo e il corporatismo, or fascism is corporatism. And one of the points that I made when during the course of the massive series about Eddie the Friendly Spook, specifically in For the Record 762, I compared the Snowden operation, and the Snowden operation is quite obviously an intelligence operation, with not only the U2 incident, but the destabilization of, among other things, the Obama administration. This operation, the Snowden operation, is a whole lot more than that. But in keeping with that, one of the points we noted was that a key judicial decision in favor of Edward Snowden was arrived at by Judge Richard Leon. He was not only a George W. Bush appointee, but helped to cover up not only the Iran-Contra affair, but the October surprise, and was also a key player in the destabilization of the Obama administration, utilizing Whitewater affair was a destabilization of the Clinton administration, Clinton's incredibly stupid indiscretion with Monica Lewinsky, having then been exploited by Bush White House appointees like Linda Tripp with a counterterrorism background to destabilize the Clinton administration. Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch, who at a rally in Washington said to Obama, come out with your hands up and put down the Quran. He also was a key player in the Whitewater scandal, which led directly to the Lewinsky destabilization gambit. This is not to say that Bill Clinton wasn't incredibly stupid to do that, but it appears to have been a destabilization operation, again with Linda Tripp, a Bush, George H.W. Bush White House appointee with a counterterrorism background, having been one of the key players in bringing Monica Lewinsky forward. Edward Snowden's first attorney was a guy named Bruce Fine, who was the top legal advisor to Ron Paul's presidential campaign in 2012. Ron Paul is the, calling him a fascist would be really giving him more credit than he deserves. He is the antediluvian reactionary, joined at the hip with David Duke, among others, who quite literally believes in slavery. And Ron Paul's presidential campaign was bankrolled by Peter Thiel, for the most part, his super PAC bankrolled by Peter Thiel, who is not only the lead, the largest stockholder in Palantir that appears to make the Prism software, but is also the largest stockholder in Facebook. And we're going to have more to say about both Palantir and Facebook in just a minute. Now, Snowden has a new attorney, a fellow named Plato, that's P-L-A-T-O, just like the Greek philosopher, and the author of The Republic, last name Kacheris, C-A-C-H-E-R-I-S. An article from the Washington Post of April 29th of 2014 by Colby Itkowitz, I-T-K-O-W-I-T-Z, titled Snowden's Lawyer, Famous for Espionage Clients and Monica Lewinsky, and it reads in part as follows. Edward Snowden has retained a new attorney who was well-versed in the world of espionage, but Plato Kacheris is also known for being a stealth legal navigator for those who find themselves suddenly notorious. In some instances, like Snowden, the two go hand in hand. A New York Times story published Tuesday morning about Kacheris taking on Snowden's case leaves out perhaps the lawyer's most famous clients, Monica Lewinsky, President Bill Clinton's mistress, and Fawn Hall, Oliver North's secretary of the Iran-Contra scandal. Kacheris helped Lewinsky receive immunity from prosecution, freeing her to testify about her sexual relationship with Clinton. Parenthetically, that was a key element of the destabilization operation. Continuing, Kacheris also got immunity from prosecution for Fawn Hall, who was secretary to Oliver North, so she could speak freely. Hall, by the way, broke the law by smuggling documents out of the White House in her brassiere, according to her testimony. And there are other key clients that Kacheris has had. The mega lawyer has been the go-to defense lawyer for most D.C. scandals since representing Attorney General John Mitchell during the Watergate crisis. One of the key backers of Edward Snowden has been Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son. One of his top aides is a guy named Jack Hunter, who was a chairman of the League of the South, which not only believes in slavery, they think the South was right in the Civil War, they think the South should secede again. Not surprisingly, they are joined at the hip with the white supremacist movement. By the way, Jack Hunter was Ron Paul's blogger during the 2012 campaign, in which Eddie Snowden contributed money to Ron Hall and supported him. CNN Money of May 1st of 2014 notes something interesting about Rand Paul's supporters. This is from, this article is titled, Rand Paul, I'm Not Afraid of Technology, again from CNN Money of May 1st of 2014. What have you learned, skipping down, what have you learned from your conversations with entrepreneurs like Peter Thiel and others in Silicon Valley? Point is that here we have Rand Paul networking with Peter Thiel, his father's top the top investor in his father's super PAC. His father, of course, is Ron Paul, skipping down. You've got an apparent supporter in Joe Lonsdale, L-O-N-S-D-A-L-E. A company he co-founded called Palantir got startup funding from the CIA Venture Fund to enhance the surveillance agency's ability to sort data. The point being that one of Rand Paul's supporters is the co-founder of Palantir, in which Peter Thiel is the largest stockholder. It is Palantir, their disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, that is almost certainly the maker of the Prism software. Guess who else is backing Rand Paul? This is from the blog The Week of May 1st of 2014. Ralph Nader wants liberals to back Rand Paul. Don't do it, by Bill Scher, S-C-H-E-R. This week, Ralph Nader returned to the political stage with a new book called Unstoppable, whose triumphant subtitle is The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. To kick off his publicity tour, he has argued that liberals should definitely, unquote, impeach Barack Obama, abandon the international militarist Hillary Clinton, and instead embrace Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, as a possible leader of his dream coalition. Ralph Nader, whose Green Party candidacy in 2000 was instrumental in producing the deadlock that was basically resolved, unquote, by the Supreme Court when they basically appointed George W. Bush to be president of the United States. Rand Paul falls to the right of Ivan the Terrible. Again, with Rand Paul, as with his father, you find the behind the curtain in front of him, you find the Ludwig von Mises Institute, the League of the South, people who believed in slavery, unabashed white supremacists. Rand Paul was networking with the American Third Position, an overt fascist and white supremacist organization. And this is who Ralph Nader is backing at the moment. It would appear that he is reprising his actions in the run-up to the 2000 election. We're kind of seeing old home week with Plato Cacheras, who was Monica Lewinsky's attorney, and people like Richard Leon and Larry Klayman, and now Ralph Nader. What we're going to do now is to listen to a portion from side one of For the Record 264, Darth Nader, Ralph Nader's Politics of Hypocrisy. This was recorded in January of 2001. This is from an article from Bushwash.net, How Nader Profits While He Preaches, by Jeff McMahon, from October 27th of the year 2000.
The following is from the VoteNader.org website, V-O-T-E-N-A-D-E-R, and this is quoted in an article by Jeff McMahon that I'm about to read into the record in detail. Ralph Nader, Winona LaDuke, and others, other Naderoids, have condemned Al Gore because his mother, now not Al Gore, but his mother's trust, has a big block of Occidental Petroleum stock that she inherited from her husband, who was a senator from Tennessee. This has led, the fact that Gore's mother had a block of Occidental Petroleum stock has led some to condemn Al Gore. Well, I think that the yardstick that Winona LaDuke and other Naderoids used to condemn Al Gore should and must be held up to measure Ralph Nader. Quote, as I listen to the vice president espouse his views on campaign finance reform, I look at his investment portfolio and have to ask how that might influence public policy. Gore owns substantial stock in Occidental Oil Company, which is working to exploit oil reserves under Ua Land in Colombia. That, again, a quote from Winona LaDuke, Ralph Nader's vice presidential candidate. And since Ms. LaDuke and Ralph Nader and others have condemned Al Gore because of his mother's trust stock in Occidental Oil, I do think that assessing Ralph Nader by the yardstick by which he has measured others is not only fair but necessary. The following article was also researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This is an article entitled How Nader Profits While He Preaches. It's by Jeff McMahon, capital M-C, capital M-A-H-O-N. This was posted on October 27th of the year 2000, and the URL is www.bushwatch.net. That's www.bushwatch.net/nader.htm. And again, this was posted on October 27th of the year 2000. Jeff McMahon writes as follows in the article, How Nader Profits While He Preaches. Did you know that Ralph Nader has a financial interest in Dick Cheney's success and has financial ties to Enron, one of George W. Bush's major campaign contributors? While Nader attacks corporations such as Halliburton, Raytheon, Boeing, Ford, Philip Morris, Pfizer, McDonald's, and Occidental as being harmful to mankind, he makes investment profits off of all of these and more. What's the point, you ask? If corporate contributions corrupt candidates, can't corporate investments corrupt candidates? And if Mr. Nader questions Mr. Gore's populist rhetoric and his mother's oil holdings, shouldn't he also question his own? As you know, Greens and other activists have been protesting Al Gore because his mother's trust owns stock in Occidental Petroleum, which has been striving to drill for oil on the sacred lands of the indigenous Uwa people in Colombia. In the U.S., the protests have had two main targets, Mr. Gore and Fidelity Investments, one of the largest holders of Occidental stock. Fidelity holds far more shares, by the way, than Pauline Gore's trust. Fidelity controls about $500 million worth of Occidental stock, according to the Rainforest Action Network, which accuses Fidelity of, quote, investing in genocide, unquote. Protesters have urged Fidelity investors to divest from Fidelity unless Fidelity pressures Occidental to cancel its Columbia project. Apparently, Ralph Nader didn't hear them. In the financial disclosure form he filed on June 14th, Ralph Nader reported that he owns between $100,000 and $250,000 worth of shares of the Fidelity Magellan Fund. As an owner of the fund, Nader owns a portion of the stocks that make up the fund, including its 4,321,400 shares of Occidental Petroleum. Mr. Nader has no control over the investment choices Fidelity makes in his fund, but he receives reports of fund holdings, and he has his choice of funds. Unlike Mr. Gore, Mr. Nader has a personal stake in Occidental, and he has not issued any press release announcing his divestment or pressuring Occidental to halt its project. But wait, there's more. Fidelity Magellan also owns stock in Dick Cheney's Halliburton Company, which has been linked in a published report to the deaths of environmental activists and indigenous people in the Niger Delta. So please note that, again, Ralph Nader holds anywhere up to $250,000 worth of Fidelity Magellan Fund, and Fidelity Magellan Fund owns stock in Dick Cheney's Halliburton Oil Company. Continuing. And I'm sure you will recognize the names below, just a small sampling of the companies in which Ralph Nader has a personal stake. And then Jeff McMahon lists the following corporations, and again, these are corporations in which Fidelity Magellan owns stock. And the list reads as follows. Greens and Naderoids, take note. Exxon Corporation, what is not mentioned in the Jeff McMahon article, that one of George W. Bush's top advisors is a guy named Michael Boskin, who is a director of Exxon. Bear that in mind. Let's continue with the list. Exxon, Royal Dutch Petroleum, BP Amoco, Chevron, Bush advisor Condoleezza Rice is a director of Chevron. That, by the way, is Jeff McMahon's text here. I would note that a director of Exxon is Michael Boskin. Continuing with the list of companies in which Fidelity Magellan owns stock, and bear in mind that Ralph Nader has somewhere up to $250,000 in Fidelity Magellan among his investments, Shell, Sunoco, Texaco, the Coastal Corporation, Gulf of Mexico Drilling and Coal Mining, Total Fina, specialist in international oil exploitation, Raytheon, Missile Guidance Systems, General Dynamics, Warships, Kimberly-Clark, Destroyer of Forests, Louisiana Pacific, Destroyer of Forests, Polluter of Bays, Ford Motor Company, chastised by Nader just last week, General Motors, ditto, Biogen, Biopharmaceuticals, Genentech, Biopharmaceuticals, Monsanto, pesticides including Roundup and bioengineering, including corn that kills butterflies. Then the following are all pharmaceutical companies. Bristol-Myers, Squibb, Merck, Pfizer, Warner-Lambert, Caterpillar, maker of bulldozers, McDonald's, a villain of globalization, Clorox, maker of ozone layer holes, Gillette, former torturer of bunnies, Procter & Gamble, and Philip Morris. By the way, one of the companies that I did not note in the initial listing here, Kimberly-Clark, a destroyer of forests, and Louisiana Pacific, destroyer of forests, polluter of bays. Louisiana Pacific has had a lot of publicity here in California. That is one of the main companies involved with the cutting or attempted cutting of old-growth redwoods, and they're among Ralph Nader's corporate investments. Continuing, returning to the list and overlapping with the enumeration that I engaged in, McDonald's, a vision of globalization, a villain of globalization, also a vision, perhaps, of globalization, Clorox, maker of ozone layer holes, Gillette, former torturer of bunnies, Procter & Gamble, and Philip Morris. And the next time there's an anti-consumerism day, be aware that Mr. Nader owns stock in The Gap, The Limited, and these big box purveyors of sprawl, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Staples. Also a couple of energy companies, Montana Power Company, moving from oil, gas, and coal to fiber optics, and Enron, the largest natural gas company. Enron, by the way, a major corporate backer of George W. Bush's candidacy. And by the way, as I speak on December 10th of the year 2000, everybody who listens to this program, when you hear it, take a look at what's happened to the price of natural gas. Continuing. Fidelity Magellan controls stock in hundreds more corporations. These just popped out at me. I don't think it's a sin for a man to have investments, although there is a case for hypocrisy here, but I think those activists chaining themselves to desks at the Gore campaign might want to also visit the Nader office. In 1996, Nader refused to release a financial disclosure statement or his tax return, saying it was, quote, full of zeros, unquote. This year, he filed a financial disclosure, perhaps because his contribution level triggered a requirement. Personally, I can't believe he's not in a blind trust or one of the socially conscious funds that are available, but apparently no one scrutinizes Nader. Everyone assumes he is above reproach. He still refuses to release his personal income tax return. And then there are a number of relevant quotes that Jeff McMahon provides in this article. The first is a 1996 NPR interview. Scott Simon, Mr. Nader, would you, as major party presidential candidates do, release copies of your tax return and financial disclosure statement? Ralph Nader, no, because I want to practice what I've preached for 30 years. I have advocated the privacy of medical records, income tax records, because I think it's an essential defense to corporate power and arbitrary government power. Scott Simon, I'm just wondering if American voters aren't entitled to know something about what your sources of financial support have been over the years in work which you're clearly involved, even for the benefit of the American people, just so they can, you know, make a rational judgment. Ralph Nader, well, I've said it to anybody who asks. It's not relevant because it's full of zeros. Parenthetically, I would ask. It's not a bad thing to have in your financial statement is lots of zeros. I wouldn't mind having about six following any basic integer other than zero in mine. Continuing, beginning again with Nader's statement here. Ralph Nader, well, I've said it to anybody who asks. It's not relevant because it's full of zeros. In other words, I don't take any funds from any of these nonprofit groups. I don't take any funds from the potential campaign contributors, and it's hard to, you know, demonstrate a negative. Well, he's taking plenty of money from profit groups or taking profits along with them. That, by the way, from the website www.npr.org/hotnews. Another quote. This from the Washington Post of June 18th of the year 2000. Quote, Nader said the stocks he chose were the, quote, most neutral type companies, unquote. And quoting Nader directly, number one, they're not monopolists. And number two, they don't produce landmine, napalm, and weapons, he said. And then Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 777,080 shares of Raytheon, missile manufacturer, plus five other aerospace and defense corporations. Nader, quote, I'm quite aware of how the arms race is driven by corporate demands for contracts, whether it's General Dynamics or Lockheed Martin. They drive it through Congress. They drive it by hiring Pentagon officials in the Washington military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower phrased it, unquote. That from the Progressive magazine, April of 2000. Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 2,041,800 shares of General Dynamics. And quoting now from the Washington Post of Saturday, June 17th of the year 2000, quote, The corporations are planning our futures. They are making sure our children grow up corporate. The kids are over-medicated, militarized, cosmetized, and corporatized. They are raised by KinderCare, fed by McDonald's, and educated by Channel One. Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 15,694,800 shares of McDonald's. The next quote, is from the Nader's testimony before the House Budget Committee on June 30, 1999. Bristol-Myers Squibb markets Taxol at a wholesale price that is nearly 20 times its manufacturing cost. A single injection of Taxol can cost patients considerably more than $2,000, and treatment requires multiple injections. And Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 15,266,900 shares of Bristol-Myers Squibb. And the next quote is from the program Burden of Proof on CNN, and it's a direct quote from Nader. Quote, "Both parties are terrible on antitrust. Look, we have Boeing now, one aircraft company manufacturer after the McDonnell Douglas merger." Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 2,908,600 shares of Boeing. Quote, "Equally damaging," Nader said, "was the Justice Department's failure to effectively challenge such recent mergers as British Petroleum with Amoco and Exxon with Mobil." Quote, "The combining of these giant oil companies concentrates the oil industry's economic power in fewer hands and gives those merged companies greater opportunity to manipulate prices," unquote, Nader said, again quoting, "Oil company profits are up on average of 300% in the first quarter of 2000 compared to the first quarter of 1999. And that is from a Nader 2000 press release on June 28th of the year 2000. Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 24,753,870 shares of BP Amoco, 28,751,268 shares of Exxon Mobil. And then the next quote is from Salon Magazine, September 26th of the year 2000. Quote, "The bearded Eddie Vedder, with chin-length hair framing his still boyish face, launched into a tender version of Soon Forget from Pearl Jam's latest album, Binaural. He called out facetiously to find out whether Microsoft co-founder and area billionaire Paul Allen were in the audience, and then dedicated this song about the isolation and loneliness that accompany excessive wealth to Allen and Bill Gates. After receiving a standing ovation, Vedder brought Nader to the stage, introducing him as, quote, someone who represents us and not the corporate interests," unquote. Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 41,845,400 shares of Microsoft. Then Jeff McMahon goes on to comment, "What's the point, you ask? If corporate contributions corrupt candidates, can't corporate investments corrupt candidates? And if Mr. Nader questions Mr. Gore's populist rhetoric, shouldn't he also question his own?" And again, Nader's vice presidential candidate, Winona LaDuke, questioned Gore as follows. And again, this is because his mother's trust owns stock in, holds a block of Occidental Petroleum. Quote, "As I listen to the vice president espouse his views on campaign finance reform, I look at his investment portfolio and have to ask how that might influence public policy. Gore owns substantial stock in Occidental Oil Company, which is working to exploit oil reserves under Ua Land in Colombia." And again, I think that same yardstick that wielded by Winona LaDuke, Nader's vice presidential candidate, needs to be applied to Ralph Nader. And bear in mind that Nader's, not that Fidelity Magellan is Nader's exclusive fund, but he owns somewhere up to $250,000 in Fidelity Magellan, and that's one of his many investments. And among the many those their investments, Halberton Oil and its subsidiary, Brown & Root. That's Dick Cheney's company.
That begins from, for the record, 264, How Nader Profits While He Preaches by Jeff McMahon from the Bushwatch.net website from October 27th of 2000. This concludes Side A of For the Record program number 797, Cyber Libertarian Fascism, an update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This has been recorded on June 11th of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.